We have reached a verdict already. We all just kind of looked at each other and nodded. We find the defendant guilty of charges.
Weight 105?
Yeah,
in your bra.
Your Honor, I object.
You would.
Bastard!
Hey! Quiet!
Whether it's race judicata or stare decisis, there is no basis for imposing some draconian policy with regard to bail, nunc pro tunc.
Your Honor, the defense is now just making up words.
We came into your trial. Oh, look how cute. There's like a judge and everything. And jury people.
Vote for Al!
Ladies.
Welcome to Opening Arguments, the podcast that pairs an inquisitive interviewer with a real-life lawyer. This podcast is sponsored by the law offices of P. Andrew Torres, LLC, for entertainment purposes, is not intended as legal advice, and does not form an attorney-client relationship. Don't take legal advice from a podcast.
Hello and welcome to Opening Arguments. This is episode 216. I'm your host, Thomas Smith. That over there is Andrew Torres, Esquire. How are you doing, Andrew Torres, Esquire?
I am fantastic. That doesn't mean I am still not angry with rage, but I'm also fantastic because I love doing the show with you, man.
So, yeah, it's true. I do feel better a little bit after recording. It helps. It helps a little bit, but it'll never help enough. Go vote. Okay, but we're going to talk about some other stuff. We've got a guest, as we referenced last week. We've got Chad Schneider coming on to answer some questions about 3D guns. That'll be first up. And then we're going to talk constitutional hardball. And apparently there is a really weird, bizarre Rick Scott story that Andrew's going to tell. I can't wait for that. And we'll see what that leaves us time for. We might kind of go into another topic, depending on how long it takes. So that's our show today. Let's get to it.
All right.
As Charlton Heston famously said, "From my cold, dead hand, you sons of bitches, this far and no further with your damn dictatorship."
Did you know that hammers kill more than guns?
Oh, yeah. I'm a gun enthusiast.
All right. And as teased last week in the TTTBE segment, we've got a special guest, Chad Schneider. How are you doing, Chad?
I'm doing well, thank you.
Yeah, we're waiting with bated breath currently to find out just how good of a lawyer you are. But in the meantime, we're going to talk 3D guns.
So in addition to being a friend of mine, Chad is a professional engineer. He is the founder and head honcho over at Route 3 Labs. So he works every day on the kinds of issues that you and I were sort of fumbling back and forth with respect to 3D printing and materials fabrication. Have I gotten that mostly right, Chad? Is that a fair introduction?
Oh, that's pretty good. Yeah, we do a lot of 3D printing. We work with a lot of materials. So we do product development and prototype fabrication.
Yeah.
I'm just jealous that you work at some place called something, something labs. that's some super villain stuff or maybe superhero stuff. I don't know which one.
True story. With a friend of mine, a childhood friend of mine, we started a software company back in the mid 1990s that never went anywhere, and we called it Arbutus Sports Labs. And the idea we were going to develop some baseball forecasting software, and we did some work on it and that sort of thing. But our tagline was Arbutus Sports Labs, and then in lower font. .. We don't really have a lab. but I will point out, Chad really has a lab.
All
and
right.
So and the reason that I wanted to bring Chad, that I wanted to bring you on the show is because we got a ton of email after we did our show and a couple of follow-ups on the defense distributed Cody Wilson and 3D printed guns. And one of the emails that I got was from a listener who has not given me permission to use his name. So I'm going to keep him anonymous. We'll give him credit if he writes in and says, no, hey, I want credit for sending this email. And I'm going to read a little bit of the email. And I want to just sort of talk about some of the claims because I had no way to evaluate this. And so I wanted to get an expert to, you know, rather than, you know, us try and figure it out to evaluate these claims. So here's the listener's email. He says, I love the show, but I believe your fear of 3D printed guns might be based on a misunderstanding of the technology. I'm an engineer that's worked heavily in additive manufacturing, and a process that I helped develop is what allowed the creation of the Liberator's barrel. And the Liberator is the 3D all plastic gun, right? Some things you should know. It is not possible at this time to make all non-metal 3D printed firearm due to the nature of ABS and PLA plastic. The materials commonly used in home 3D printing will never be capable of this. So I kind of want to start at that first one. My understanding, Chad, was that several folks had in fact managed to print an entire Liberator using nothing but 3D plastic. It made it susceptible to blowing up in your hands or blowing up after a couple of uses. But I certainly was under the impression that it was possible to do so. What do you think about that first claim that the nature of, and I have no idea what the ABS and PLA plastic, so, you know, feel free to like riff on that as well. But that due to the plastic that's in 3D printers, you can't make an all plastic gun.
ABS is a very common plastic material that you probably have at your fingertips, a bunch of ABS plastic on your desk of the monitor and the laptop and the mouse and things. It's very common. It's very cheap. PLA is more common in 3D printers because of the temperatures that you can 3D print with. It's lower. It's easier to stick and things like that. It's kind of stiff, but it's weak. And ABS is maybe a little bit stronger, but they're not terribly strong materials. I don't see any problem with his comment that ABS or PLA are not going to make a viable gun, or at least one that is going to be reliable and shoot more than once. I would say that that's pretty unlikely, but it's possible. You could use 3D printing to create the majority of the components and then put, you know, half inch copper tubing or create a barrel, buy a barrel and stick that in. And that would take a lot of the force. So I've often thought about, how you could integrate 3D printing with other materials. And we do that very commonly in prototype development. So if we want to add screws, we'll add threaded inserts. If we want to combine 3D printing with, say, laser cut acrylic or machined aluminum or other off-the-shelf parts. So I can buy off-the-shelf components, put 3D printed features around it, and make something relatively complex without having to make it strong as well. And so I don't see why you couldn't do something like that in a 3D printed gun make that work, even though you're using cheap plastic parts.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. I mean, it's interesting to me that you know, you've sort of defined ABS plastic as, you know, the plastic around my monitor or in my mouse. Like, maybe it's because I'm not an engineer, but like this seems, you know, reasonably solid to me. Yeah. Right? You know, when I think of like cheap plastic, I think there's all of your
Transformers toys that I'm sure are around you right now.
Yeah, no, I definitely have a Transformer sitting on my desk. It's a Ravage toy. I'm angling the little cannons up as we speak. But hilariously, there's a market for people who make aftermarket Transformers parts, right? So they'll do little add-on pieces of, and those are like, they kind of look, I've seen some of them before, and they kind of have a, you know, do you remember the old like wax lips for from Halloween, right? Like, I mean, they really look, you know, like you definitely couldn't make a gun out of the stuff that they use for the, you know, Transformers parts. So I don't know that this mouse looks fairly solid.
So
to
it
me.
Might look solid, but if you think about the bullet, in order to take a bullet and accelerate it to, say, 500 or 700 feet per second, you need to be able to support that force. And so if you can't shoot a bullet at the thing, if you think about what would happen if the bullet were to hit that thing after you shot it out of a gun, that's kind of the same thing that happens when you shoot the thing out of a gun. Those forces are equal and opposite.
Hmm. Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Yeah, right. I guess. Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. And I guess I never thought about it that way. I would not want to shoot my mouse with a gun. So that's a good way of thinking about it. All right. So the next claim, I'm going to skip over a little bit. The next claim is the Liberator requires metal parts in addition to the plastic components. The process to create one is very complex and requires a number of processing techniques like the acetone bath for smoothing the barrel. The weapon is only good for a single 22 caliber shot, and then the barrel and the ammunition must be replaced. And then, and again, I'm sorry that there's, you know, some sentence fragments in here, but I want to get to the claim that says a single barrel in even the best printer will take you more than 2 hours to make and process. So a couple of things in that sentence. I mean, we've already talked about the metal plus plastic. I don't know how much you know about the, presumably you don't know anything about the actual Liberator design unless you've been, you know, downloading files off the dark web which you don't have to admit.
I don't know anything about the Liberator, and I tried to avoid downloading it.
as your lawyer, that's exactly what I would tell you to say on the air. But what about the claim that, It would take 2 hours to 3D print a single barrel in the best printer. Is that correct?
I would say that's probably pretty reasonable. Yeah, it would be slow. That's assuming that you don't just use a 22 barrel and just stick it into an oversized 3D printed barrel. But going back to the claim that it takes a long time to 3D print materials. It's true. It does take hours. There's not really any way around that right now. I don't know of any technologies that are faster in 3D printing. I know some of that I've heard that are coming out that might be faster one day, but now they're not. So it would take many hours. I don't know how that's relevant, though. It seems like that's not really the question in this argument.
Yeah, if the only defense to any kid out there could have a 3D printed gun at any time is, well, yeah, but I'll have to wait a couple hours. That's not really a strong defense. But I will say, in terms of printing around an existing barrel, I could see that being, you know, like if you have, is there a meaningful way, I don't know if this question will be outside of, you know, your scope of knowledge, but is there a meaningful sense in which you wouldn't have access to a gun, but you would have access to a barrel of a gun to print around? Or I guess if you use something that was like a barrel of a gun, maybe?
Well, a barrel of a gun, I mean, it's just a piece of metal tubing. You could figure out.
Okay, so you could use something that's
used in something and put a bullet in it. I don't know.
So it's not as though you would need a specifically made, like, because you said a barrel of something, what did you say, a 22 or something? So you would be able to get your hands on, which is the whole question is this a danger in that people who wouldn't otherwise be able to get a hold of a gun can easily manufacture one? And so I guess your answer then would be yes, because at least insofar as this part of it, you can get some sort of tubing or some metal something that'll make it you able to print this gun even when you wouldn't have access to buying a regular gun.
Yeah, I think that's right.
Okay.
Yeah, and interesting, you had mentioned technologies. The next sentence is, further, we've had subtractive manufacturing for a century. additive manufacturing or 3D printing has been around since the 70s. Subtractive manufacturing is just the inverse, removing material instead of adding it to the build area. The fundamentals of 3D printing are very much the same, and almost everything that can be accomplished by 3D printing can be accomplished by CNC mills, which are used by weapons manufacturers to create firearms and are available to the public for roughly the same price as a 3D printer. Sorry, that was one sentence. I think there are kind of two concepts in that, right? I think I get the idea that, you know, subtractive manufacturing is sort of like I take the clay and I cut away everything that isn't a bust of Homer, and then I'm left with my statue. What about, I mean, it seems to me the interesting claim there is that this CNC mill are the things that are used by weapons manufacturers, and you could buy them as cheaply as you could buy a 3D printer. What say you with
respect to that? I would say that it's in the same order of magnitude. You know, I can buy a 3D printer for $300 to $2,000 for a home 3D printer. You could buy a CNC router that can machine aluminum, and you're in the ballpark of, you know, $1,500 to $2,000 or $3,000. So it's not out of the realm of possibility. You can get a used mill on Craigslist for $4,000 or $5,000. So that's true. I think the difference is that it takes a lot of skill to make a part out of metal and to CNC it. Even with the CAD file, there's some skill involved in.
And what is CNC? I'm sorry, I don't even know what the
acronym is. Stands for computed numerical control, I think. Basically it's the you have the model in the computer and it has all the positions and speeds and how the tooling will rotate and everything, and it just controls the milling process. So you can create all kinds of crazy shapes, and you can do it very accurately. So it takes a lot of the guesswork out, and it also means you can make non-straight shapes in the milling in the process. But the claim that we've been doing subtractive manufacturing for 100 years is correct. I mean, you don't need a CNC in order to build parts out of metal. You can just do it with a regular mill that moves in X, Y, and Z. And so you can, or the three axes that you're machining with. And a lathe. So a lathe makes things round and a mill makes things square. So you can, between the two, you can make guns pretty easily. That's what was originally used to make guns. So I think the difference is that the skill involved in both of those tools it's a pretty high bar. It takes time to learn these things. It takes time to understand feed rates and materials and work holding and all these different things and accuracy. And you have to have a lot of the tools that go along with the mill to make it accurate, like measurement tools and things. But 3D printing, if you just download the file, you can hit print and start making parts. And if you had a machine and you had a dimension drawing and you download that, that might be easier than creating it yourself, but it's not as easy as a 3D printed part. And coming up with a gun by scratch, you know, from scratch, designing it yourself and then building it out of these machines, that's even more complicated. That's, you know, months and months of work of figuring it out, building it, it fails. If you don't have a template to go after, it's going to take time to design something that's functional.
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. So let me ask it as a leading question. My impression, right? If you told me as somebody with zero mechanical aptitude that I could either 3D print something from a file that's available on the internet or that I could mill something, right? Like the first seems like, yes, me as an idiot, like I could manage it, right? But the second seems like even with the computer control that I would still need to know, you know, how to use the equipment. For example, in your answer, I think you said, maybe I'll get it backwards. I think you said, Mills make things square and lathes make things round. Is that right?
Or do no, I that's that right.
Okay. Like, I wouldn't have known that, right? Like, I have zero idea about that, right? So my impression, and again, I think this informed, you know, what we were saying on the show, was that kind of the primary harm here on the 3D guns is the accessibility and availability to non-professionals, right? Like, if so, you know, yeah, I get it, you know, and a bunch of people wrote in to say, well, you know, if you have a lathe, you can bore out I get all that. To me, it's sort of like, can an enterprising teenager, you know, does it make it easier for an enterprising teenager to manufacture a deadly firearm at his school? And, you know, and that was sort of the mindset that I took into the segment. And I guess I want to know, you know, sort of all this taken together, like, is that, was I wrong on that? Was I right, but with an explanation? Like, how, you know, how is that a fair impression?
Well, I'd be surprised in the history of machine shops if there wasn't a kid that made parts for a gun at school sometime. They've probably been smart enough to not get caught at it or whatever. But it seems like to make a 3D printed gun, if it was possible, then it would be far, far easier if you just downloaded a file and hit print, went home, came back, and it's ready for you. I think one of the things that caught my ear, I guess, is the concept that the materials used in 3D printing will never be capable of this. And, you know, never say never. There are lots of 3D printing technologies that are fully capable of making a functional gun out of metal. You can 3D print in aluminum and stainless steel and titanium. You can make parts out of carbon fiber. So that right now they're very expensive, but what is expensive? I mean, it changes as far as what it means to be accessible and how motivated someone is. If someone's not motivated by money, they're not trying to make a gun because they don't want to pay for a gun. Then the opposite is that they don't want to pay for them the gun because they can't buy a gun for whatever reason, or can't be known buying a gun. Then the cost maybe isn't the issue, and then right. They can afford a $100,000 3D printer that can print metal or carbon fiber or something. And so, as these technologies get cheaper and cheaper, there will be a time some. I don't know when, but sometimes this will be less expensive. I just see it every year that 3D printers become more complex, more accurate, and less expensive.
Okay, so if I were to try to sum it up and bottom line it for all the non-engineers listening, it sounds like definitely it's not so much a danger right now. It's not as though any kid with some sort of crappy 3D printer can print up a gun based on these plans right now, but that if you have a really good one, or if you're creative with, you know, buying some sort of like one or two metal parts and then printing around them or something like that, you could make it now. And further, that as technology gets cheaper and progresses and maybe these printers are more accessible to everybody, then maybe it would be the case that everybody could download this file and just push print and wait and then have a gun. Did I get anything wrong there? Is that right?
That seems right. I mean, once the files are out there, if people download them, then they're out there. So when the technology catches up, then there's no pulling those back. So I agree that it's certainly not a big threat right now. I'm not concerned about it as a threat of people running around with 3D printed guns. I think the technology could get there. But there's also tons of ways to create weapons. I mean, I think anyone who would be arguing the point would say you can make a weapon out of steel pipe. You can make, you can use a knife. You can, you know, make a bomb out of tons of materials from Home Depot or even the grocery store. So it's not an issue of whether we can make things that harm people. If you're properly motivated or improperly motivated, you could make a make a weapon out of virtually anything. So that's not really what my concern about 3D printing guns is. I think it's just a novelty. What people would think about.
What about the? I guess one other thing that we didn't really touch on is if it's true that the plastics you're describing can't actually support a gun. The other question would be, for use like a terrorist plot, to evade metal detection in an airport. Is that something that could be possible or is possible to be able to make it like pretend the resources or the, the money isn't the issue with any sort of current printing technology? Could you make a plastic or at least non-metal gun that would work enough to bring on an airplane?
I want to say that it's very hard to say something's impossible. The bullets are going to have to be metal, I would think.
Right.
You could potentially make things that are small enough, well-placed metal that it wouldn't throw off a metal detector that has to deal with things like pens and watches and keys and stuff. So, I would say it's not impossible. I don't know that it would be a big deal, be a big concern over all the other ways you could harm people.
Yeah.
Hey, this is an ad for the Great Courses Plus. Look, you're an OA listener. You care about the Supreme Court. If you didn't, you wouldn't listen to this show. And as we talk about in this episode, the Supreme Court's fall session is starting. And we're going to be there to give you deep dives into a ton of different interesting cases. But something you can use to supplement is the Great Courses Plus, which has a really, really cool course about this, which is called History of the Supreme Court. And look, as a law geek, like, it's really cool to get into the personal history behind these cases where, I tend to know it from the law geekery perspective. I tend to know about the holding and that sort of thing. So this is the perfect opportunity, if you're an OA listener, to get started with any of the Great Courses Plus. There are thousands of lectures with the Great Courses Plus. You get unlimited access to stream their entire library from history, politics, business, science, how to speak a new language, how to cook, all of that. You can also watch or listen anytime, anywhere with the Great Courses Plus app. And as always, since they're sponsoring the show, we get a special offer just for OA listeners. Because we love the Great Courses Plus, we know you will too. You can listen to History of the Supreme Court and any of their lectures for free. So to start your free trial, you go to the special URL. You know what this one is going to be. TheGreatCoursesPlus.com/OA. That's OA for opening arguments. TheGreatCoursesPlus.com/OA. Remember the at the beginning. TheGreatCoursesPlus.com/OA.
Okay. Well, that's all the questions I have. What about you, Andrew?
Yeah, no, that gets through what I wanted to get through, which was I wanted to evaluate the claims in the email. I wanted to test our assumptions, which I think, we've gotten sort of a more, fuller picture there. I'm pretty satisfied. So, Chad, thank you so much for coming
on. Yeah, you're welcome. My pleasure. It's fun.
And if we have folks who are looking to build prototypes or take their prototypes to the implementation stage and they've are looking for sophisticated labs or a professional engineer, you wanna do a plug?
Sure. You can find our website at root3labs.com, which is R-O-O-T, the number 3, L-A-B-S.com. And we do engineering and product development, primarily medical devices. So, yeah, that's about us.
Cool. Well, we have a lot of entrepreneurs who listen to the show, so maybe they will hook up with you. So.
All right. Thanks so much, Chad.
Thank you so much.
Okay, constitutional hardball. What's going on with Rick Scott? This is the guy. I can't stand this guy. I don't know if you caught the John Oliver from a couple weeks back where they talked about giving felons the right to vote again, and Rick Scott personally sits on this panel where he like judges these people who have done everything right, and he talks, but you know, they talk about God. So I don't like him. But why? What's your story about Rick Scott?
Yeah, I am no fan of Rick Scott. He is running for the Senate in Florida right now. He is term limited to 2 terms as governor of the state of Florida. His approval rating has been like, I mean, it's better than Trump's, but it's been in the 40s. So I don't really understand how he was reelected and, you know, may get elected to the Senate. But there you go. And he has announced his intention to pack the Florida State Supreme Court, and to do so in a way that, spoiler, in my view, very clearly violates the law. But we're going to see if anybody has any remedy for it. And this, I think, falls under, as you pointed out, sort of the general header of constitutional hardball, right? That is, you know, using the, well, there's no law that says a dog can't play basketball kind of things to overturn previous norms and for nothing other than kind of pure partisan advantage. So what's going on? Rick Scott has publicly said, right, because again, these people have no shame. This is part of how they fundraise and how they pander to their pro-Trump base. He has said that there are 3 justices on the Florida State Supreme Court who are required mandatorily to retire in 2019. And Rick Scott has said, I'm going to replace all 3 of these. Well, now that would be of no consequence, right? Like that would, right? If a Supreme Court justice has to retire during your term, then you get to replace them. And the fact that these 3 justices who are the oldest are the 3 most liberal justices on the Florida State Supreme, well, you know, like, sorry, Florida citizens, it's your own damn fault for electing Rick Scott governor twice.
Yeah.
And you're just going to have to suck it up. He gets to make Supreme Court appointments. However, this is a very, very unique situation. And the situation is that the judge's terms end under the Florida state constitution at the exact same time Ooh. That Rick Scott's term ends, right? So in other words, under the state constitution, I'm going to read this exactly word for word. The governor's term begins, quote, on the first Tuesday after the first Monday in January. Okay, and that is January 8th, 2019.
Okay.
And same language, retiring justice's term ends on the first Tuesday after the first Monday in January. So,
well, wait,
you might
doesn't that
be thinking,
sound like it's an overlap? Like the term ends the day that the governor's term starts?
That and that's exactly how Scott's team has interpreted. He says, yes, by statute, the Supreme Court justices have to retire at 12:01 on Tuesday, January 8th, 2019. But I'm still governor until my successor is actually sworn in, which is going to be, you know, around 11 a.m., noon, you know, whatever on Tuesday, January 8th, 2019. So I'm just going to wake up super early that morning, and about 6 a.m., I'm going to name 3 new Supreme Court appointees. Okay, another ad for one of my favorite sponsors, Simple Contacts. You've heard me promote them before. Simple Contacts lets you renew your prescription and reorder your contacts from anywhere in minutes. Look, you listen to the show, you know that I am overworked and I do not have time to do things like make sure my eye prescription is up to date because, you know, it doesn't change that often. That's where simplecontacts.com comes in. They have a vision test. It is self-guided. It takes under 5 minutes. Under 5 minutes is a really good amount of time if you're busy like me compared to getting another eye appointment, going to the doctor, taking time off work if you got to do that sort of thing. All of that stuff. Instead, head on over to simplecontacts.com/OA20. And as that code might imply, you can do the vision test for only $20. Now, look, important legal disclaimer. A, don't take legal advice from a podcast. B, this is not a replacement for your periodic full eye health exam. All Simple Contacts does is they test that your current prescription still helps you see 20/20, and then they can renew that prescription, right? So they don't write new prescriptions. They don't examine eye health. You've still got to do all that stuff, right? But if you need to renew your contacts, and I know I need to do that. I fall behind all the time on my contacts. If that's you, there's no better solution than getting a brand new eye exam that will let you renew your contacts for $20. That is simplecontacts.com/OA20. You enter in the promo code OA20 at checkout. So a little bit different, promo code OA20. I love Simple Contacts. I think you ought to take advantage of it. If you're the kind of person that orders your contacts online and you don't have time every couple of months to go schedule a brand new eye appointment, this really is the service for you. I have used it. I stand by it. They shipped my crazy prescription out to me, and I highly recommend it. So simplecontacts.com/OA20, promo code OA20.
Well, that's what I was saying would actually, if we're going to go down to the hour, I was saying that it sounded to me, based on how you read that, that the judges serve through that whole day, whereas the governor starts, you know, hypothetically at 12:01, you know, that morning. But is that not right?
Yeah. Well, no one quite knows yet, right?
Okay. Yeah.
But Rick Scott has taken the position. I'm going to, you know, upload his statement included in the show notes where he has said, I will appoint 3 more justices on the morning that I finish my term.
Have to go through a confirmation process in the
state?
Oh, okay. Right.
Yeah. So that's the thing, is he just gets to nominate them to the state Supreme Court. So as soon as he made that statement in June of 2017, the organization Common Cause, as well as the League of Women Voters of Florida and some individual plaintiffs, filed a lawsuit to say, you can't do that. And they filed, this is my favorite when we get to do these kinds of stories that have Latin phrases that, I mean, I guess maybe the reason that, you know, I'm not up for Supreme Court justice is because I certainly don't remember these words. They filed a petition for writ of quo warranto.
That's made up.
And yeah, it sounded kind of made up to me, too. So I had to look it up. A petition for a writ of quo warranto. Right. So look. We've talked about other writs, right? Like a writ of habeas corpus is a writ that says you are being unfairly detained by the power of the state. Habeas corpus meaning literally you have the body. And so they can, you know, you petition and say, I shouldn't be here. I should not be in detention. I should be released. We have talked about getting a writ of mandamus, and a writ of mandamus, same Latin root word for mandatory, right? It is the government has no discretion. They have to do this thing. They're not doing this thing. A writ of mandamus says make them do that thing. Quo warranto, I was at a loss. So I looked it up, and it is a writ or legal action requiring a person to show by what warrant, and that means justification, an office is held, claimed, or exercised. And you petition for a writ of quo warranto when you think that somebody has improperly exercised certain elected authority. And that's what this is, right? This says... It's kind of like the equivalent of a declaratory judgment action. It says Rick Scott does not have the power to name new Supreme Court justices. He said he's going to name new Supreme Court justices. So we want the Florida State Supreme Court to tell us whether he can or whether he can't. And the interesting thing to me, which is not interesting to anybody who's not a lawyer, is how narrow a line that is with another Latin phrase that we have used. And in fact, I have litigated these kinds of cases. And that is an allegation that an elected official, that a government official has acted ultra virus, V-I-R-E-S. and that is beyond the scope of your authority, right? And that's an ordinary
right
action, right? Yeah. So when you say, you know, you're acting ultra virus, right? Like that means, you know, for example, I face that in a case. I made that allegation of a county council member who tried to rezone my client's property. And I said, look, like that's ultra virus. Like she does not have the power to rezone on her own. That didn't require bringing the separate, you know, quo warranto law. It was just like it was the equivalent of the I move for a bad court thing. Right. Like it was like I just said, yeah, no, you don't have the power to do this. And you did this and it hurt my client and stop it. But this proceeding is a little bit different.
Hey, everyone, I need to tell you about one of our sponsors. There are so many good things like this podcast, for example, that are competing for your time. And as much as I wish I could read every book and or even every important book that comes out in a year, it's just simply not feasible. But our sponsor Blinkist can actually get you a lot closer than you would think. They are the only app that takes thousands of best-selling nonfiction books and distills them down to their most impactful elements so that you can read or listen to them in under 15 minutes all on your phone. With Blinkist, you will expand your knowledge and learn more in just 15 minutes than you can in almost any other way. Plus, you can listen anywhere. When I think back to the books I've read over the course of my life or even in the past few years, I don't know that I could do much better than distilling it into 15 minutes, even though I read the whole thing. I can't remember that much. And a lot of it is kind of superfluous stuff that you don't need, depending on what book you're reading. And secondly, here's where I'm going to recommend a book. If there's a certain type of book, like, say, rehashes of the 2016 election, I've read a wide range of those. And I kind of don't need to read another one, but there might be one that comes out where it's like, I do want to read that, but I'm going to hear a lot of things I've already heard. Blinkist is perfect for this because you can just get the key insights. So as an example, I think Fire and Fury by Michael Wolff is a perfect book to use Blinkist for. You know, he's got a lot of stuff in there that you don't really need to know. But he also had some really interesting insights that everybody was talking about. Hop on Blinkist and just get a quick 15-minute distillation and know everything you need to know to be able to talk intelligently about the book. My favorite time to listen to Blinkist is while I'm doing chores. I love like dishes or yard work. I love being able to listen and learn at the same time. It's really fun. And the Blinkist library is massive. They have all these timeless classics or they've got current bestsellers. Here's some examples. You've got The Miracle Morning, Thinking Fast and Slow, The Power of Habit, The 4-Hour Workweek. They've got a lot of those great self-help books that help you organize and get more out of your time. The ultimate way of doing that is using Blinkist to read those so you get even more out of your time. And they are constantly adding more titles that are just the best of whatever the genre is. So you're always getting the most powerful ideas in a made-for-mobile format. 5 million people are using Blinkist to expand their minds 15 minutes at a time. You should get started today. Right now, for a limited time, Blinkist has a special offer just for our audience. Go to Blinkist.com/OA to start your 7-day free trial. That's Blinkist, spelled Blinkist.com/OA for opening arguments to start your free 7-day trial, and you can cancel at any time. So try it out risk-free, 7-day free trial, Blinkist.com/OA.
So anyway, was filed in 2017. And I think it's kind of an interesting question, right? So so let's sort of break it down, right? Like, number one, it was filed in the state Supreme Court, right? And as we've talked about, most state Supreme Courts, including Florida, including the U.S. Supreme Court, are cert courts, which means that you don't get an automatic appeal as of right to those courts. They get to decide whether they take cases or not. But there are, and it's a tiny number of cases in the U.S. Supreme Court. It's a larger number in many state Supreme Courts where you get to file an original action in the state Supreme Court. You get to go there first. And so that's sort of the first question is this a thing where you can go first to the state Supreme Court? And then, you know, as an extension of that, right? Well, I mean, in fact, let's talk about the jurisdictional argument, right? So so what the plaintiff said, what Common Cause and the other plaintiffs said in their petition was, while this court's jurisdiction is discretionary and concurrent with other courts, right? That means they don't have to take the case. Specific considerations in this case warrant immediate review by this court instead of transfer to a circuit court followed by an appeal, right? And their arguments were, number one, no facts are in controversy. And this is a really, really good argument, right? Because remember that, as we've talked about, you know, the difference between a trial court and an appellate court is the trial court figures out the facts,
right,
and the appellate court determines whether you've applied the law correctly or not. Well, there are no facts in dispute. There's nothing to figure out. The governor has said, I'm going to appoint these guys. And the question is, does he have the legal right to appoint those guys? And I'm going with guys. I'd love to be proven wrong, but yeah, somehow I'm guessing this is not going to be a particularly diverse set of appointments that gets crammed through on the morning of January 8th. And then, most importantly, right? So number one is there are no facts in dispute, and number two, we don't have existing guidance from this court on exactly when the governor's term ends. And so any other court is just going to have to guess. So let's get that from you, right? Let's have that guidance established at the Supreme Court, the state Supreme Court level, so that, you know, we're not, because otherwise, you know, it's just going to be lower courts trying to figure out what you're going to do.
Yeah.
And then applying that imaginary standard, and then you'll get to say, no, well, we were or we weren't. So why don't we start at the top? And then the third argument is, that the, legal issue raised in this petition applies equally to vacancies resulting from district court judges whose terms may expire following the 2018 general election. So the petition says the three vacancies on this court that Governor Scott intends to fill will leave the court with justices who resided in four of the five district courts of appeal when appointed, which means applicants for two of the vacancies may reside anywhere in the state. Every circuit and district court judge in Florida, save for the few who may be ineligible or, and I love this phrase, resolutely disinterested in seeking higher judicial office. Other than those guys, everybody is a potential applicant for these vacancies and would therefore have a stake in determining which governor gets to make the appointment. This is a very real conflict of interest that simply does not exist for any member of this court. Appellate judges should not choose which governor may appoint them in the state's highest court. And that's a really good argument, right? Like that says you don't want to have a judge determine whether there's going to be a vacancy if that judge would like to serve that vacancy, right? So I, you know, pretty strong set of arguments. And look, like all forms of constitutional hardball, right? This is something where the race to the bottom is immediate and obvious, right? So if Rick Scott wins and he gets to appoint three justices at the end of his term, you know, in between 12:01 and noon, then as soon as Florida gets a Democratic governor, that governor's going to do the same thing. Right? I mean,
well,
you know, that's
so
the
constitutional hardball. Okay, first step is, I think your argument for laying out why this should be decided by the Florida Supreme Court seems totally to make sense to me. I get as yep. Well said, makes perfect sense. But is this the kind of thing that happens every term? Is that how the law is structured so that every, is it a term limit thing or is this a age related in terms of why they have to retire at this exact time?
The judges have to retire because of age. Right. So
they all happen to have. So it's not, if you reach a certain age within a term or something, or how do they all three of them.
There's a mandatory judicial retirement statute. Most states have that. That basically say, you know, once a judge gets to X age, it's only the U.S. Supreme Court. I don't want to say only. I don't know what they do in Idaho, but most states, Maryland is also one of these, require judges to take senior status and then rotate off and then have mandatory retirement when you hit a certain age. That's what the Florida state legislature has passed, mandatory retirement at a certain age at the end of a particular term. And it just so happens that there are going to be three justices. They're all the most liberal justices, and they've all exceeded the mandatory retirement age now. So they must retire on January 8th, 2019. Make sense?
Yeah, I'm just surprised that there wasn't more in whatever statute that is, you know, is demanding that. Or is it in the Constitution, the state Constitution, or is it a law?
Yeah, it's Article 5, Section 10A of the state Constitution. Oh, okay. And if your question includes the question, has anybody ever done this before? Right. The answer is no. Right, no one's ever. Right. Like it's pretty obvious from history that their term ends at the same time as the governor's. So
it's meant to be the next governor who would do it. How it's been understood. But he's exploiting this timing difference to do.
And I don't even know that there is a time. He's saying that there is a timing difference. The question is there a timing difference, right? Because that's ultimately where your lawsuit comes down to, right? And so the petition that was filed says the judicial terms do not expire until after January 8th, 2019 has concluded, right? So it they go the other way, right? Like they say, look, it's clear when your term expires on a certain date, right? You have until 11:59 p.m. on that date, right? And that has, as somebody who has filed filed pleadings electronically at 11:58 p.m., that certainly has a lot of salience, right? Like the idea that you say, right, if I tell somebody, yeah, I'm going to get that to you by January 8th, right? That doesn't mean I've got to get it to him at 12:01 a.m. on January. That means I've got to the end of the day on January 8th, right? And courts have always interpreted where they have electronic filing. If your timestamp is 11 p.m. on January 8th, you filed it on January 8th, right? Like you would not win a motion, say, to default somebody if it said the deadline was January 8th and then you filed an application that said, well, they filed it on January 8th, right? Like the court would be like, yeah, right, that was the deadline. And that is, and there's more to it, but that is essentially the argument that that Common Cause was making that says, look, there's an overlap here, but the overlap's in the wrong direction. Your term as governor ends at 12:01 because it says the new term begins.
Yeah, on that's January what I was going to say. I don't see how he's definitely having it both ways. It's not just that the Supreme Court term starts later than he's saying. It's that his term, he's extending his reign of power by a few hours to meet the difference.
Yes. That's exactly right. And his justification is a justification to tradition, right? It is, we have a swearing in ceremony, and until, you know, the next person comes in and holds their hand up and swears the oath, I'm still governor, right? So that's the issue. I told you this was filed in 2017. You might be asking, well, why do I care about it now? And the answer is because when this was filed in 2017, the Florida State Supreme Court issued a per curiam unsigned opinion that said the use of the writ of quo warranto to address prospective conduct is not appropriate. So they didn't weigh in on the substance of the argument at all. They just said, we're not going to decide this yet. Scott hasn't done anything, so therefore we can't tell if he's appropriately in office on this date, because that would be an advisory opinion.
Oh, so one thing. So the quo warranto thing was about him, not about the new. I figured it was going to be about the next three justices who are like sitting in their seats a little too early, but it's going to be about him using his power too late.
Right. Okay. Yeah. It's asking, is he governor at 8 a.m. on January 8th?
You laugh. I don't think it was that ridiculous to assume that it could apply to.
No.
They the Supreme Court justices after he appointed them improperly? Seems like it could apply to either.
And no, I was laughing because of the absurdity of the situation. In no way was I laughing at you, because the reason that this has come back up again is yesterday, Rick Scott asked the nominating commission to start reviewing applications to the court. Right. Yeah. So, you know, you asked, is there like the equivalent of the Senate's advise and consent? Rick Scott has untrammeled power to nominate whoever he wants. He does not have to get approval from the state Senate, but he's got to go through this judicial nominating commission first. And he's starting to push through his candidates through that process. They have 60 days. So that means early December is when he's going to take a look at that final list of nominees. Now, Rick Scott has said that he'll work with the incoming governor to, you know, take a look at that list. I'm guessing that if the incoming governor is a Democrat, probably not.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, right. There would be no need to go through any of this process, right? If it was a guarantee that
it was a Republican.
Yeah. Yeah. And the polls seem to show that the Democratic candidate for governor, Andrew Gillum, is, I think the favorite at this point, but in any event, he's got a strong race, right? So the reason this kind of leapt to the top of my radar is that in 2017, the state Supreme Court said, well, you know, Rick Scott, like, who knows? That guy just kind of talks. I mean, he's not done anything. Well, now he's done something. Right. And so it would not surprise me to see Common Cause refile the lawsuit and say, OK, like now we're at a place where it really makes sense to determine this because, you know, he's moved forward with his intent to nominate.
Wouldn't this be a real constitutional, a state constitutional crisis if they get to the point where it happens and then they're like, well, which three justices get to rule on whether or not this goes through? Like, how do they...
There is precedent for so there are a couple of other fun things that are at stake here.
None of this is fun. I don't know where you're getting this. All this sounds like to me is just all that matters is raw power. Will they have the power to do it or not? I don't even, but I'm sorry. Go ahead. Tell us what the fun thing is.
That's right. And I accept your chastisement on my use of the word fun.
You like explaining legal thingies, but it's just scary to me.
Look, this is a Mick Mulvaney, Leandra English situation in the making, right? That is, the new governor comes in on January 8th. Like if I were the governor, right, I looked this up because maybe I'm more crafty than Andrew Gillum, but I doubt that. I'm looking at this going, there is no, and there is no Florida law that specifies when the governor must be sworn in.
Yeah, so can he do it?
I would pick, you know, the most liberal justice left on the Florida State Supreme Court, and I'd be like, okay, dude, like, you're going to swear me in at 12:01 on January 8th, right? And so then you'll have two people who claim to be governor. They will each nominate a slate of three candidates, and you'll have six people claiming that they're state Supreme Court justices. And who knows, right? Like, I mean, is it literally going to be the person who says it first, right, counts? Or, right? Like, we totally have.
Well, I assume it's whoever's wearing the robe, because there's only a set number of robes for the justices, right? And they have to hand down their moth-eaten, smelly robe to the next person.
Can I give you another weird complication?
Oh, yes, please.
So Rick Scott, as we said at the beginning of this segment, is running for the Senate, right? Well, the U.S. Senate swears in on January 3rd, 2019.
Wow.
So he will have to step down as governor, right? His lieutenant governor would then take over and, you know, presumably kind of carry it out. So, but literally, like, you could have the situation where Scott's lieutenant governor, who is Carlos Lopez Cantera, is governor for 5 days or for 4 days, and then however much on January 8th that they're claiming that he's governor for, and that person would then technically make the appointments if Scott wins. Now, look, like, obviously, it would be good if Rick Scott does not win the Florida Senate seat, but he could, right? I mean, he won two terms as governor. He's obviously, you know, capable of winning.
Marco Rubio is capable of winning when he says he's not even running anymore and all that stuff that happened. So I don't. Hey,
thanks.
Hey, Florida, if you're listening, I don't really have high expectations of you. I don't think very highly of you. Probably not the Florida listeners who would listen to our show, though.
Yeah, we have a lot of Florida listeners, including my parents. So hopefully, mom and dad. And I told you, I've said my dad's a Republican, but he's a stop Trump Republican now. So hopefully my parents will go out and vote against Rick Scott and vote against this nonsense. And we'll
what a mess! That is a really interesting scenario. I'm curious to see how this turns out.
Yeah, I do not know the answer, right? Like, I mean, there's a common sense answer, right? And there is this is why I put it under the heading of constitutional hardball, right? Like, you kind of want to say, like, you do understand that once you weaponize this, right, that the next Democratic governor is going to do the same thing, right?
Well, what are the odds that you're going to get a worse outcome than three at once?
Yeah, no, that's right.
So they recognize who gives a shit. All that matters is what power we have. So we're going to exercise this power that we have to affect the court for as long as it lasts. I also just to ask this question that I think is probably pretty obvious, even though I don't have any hope in the U.S. Supreme Court anyway, this isn't something that could go higher, right? Because it's just purely a Florida state issue, and it's not as though, let's say, they can't decide who the heck is on the state Supreme Court. It's not as though that issue could go to the U.S. Supreme Court, is it?
Yeah, that is exactly right. This is purely a question of state law interpreting the state constitution and the quo warranto, the powers of the governor of Florida, and the U.S. Supreme Court would say, we are in no position to second guess what the Florida State Supreme Court would say. They can only do that on elections that are important. So.
Yeah,
that's
true.
That's a Bush v. Gore joke.
So. Yeah, what a mess. Wow, that's really fascinating. I hope it turns out okay, but but it's going to be that's going to be a nail biter to see what happens, you know, when the S hits the fan. I guess hopefully Brian clownhorned me earlier. Wow. Well, thanks for laying that out. Is there anything else we need to look out for, or any other?
No, that's.
Does it get any more fun?
That's it. We're gonna. Like I said, if I were Common Cause, I would refile the lawsuit. We are going to keep an eye on this and see what happens. It's, you know, it has risen kind of into the low level media because Scott has sent the request to the nominating committee. So we're gonna continue to follow the story. As of right now, we don't know. Again, you know, the arguments don't seem great, but you know, that's the I want to bracket that with, you know, obviously our biases in that, but the arguments don't seem particularly great to me, but that may not matter, right? If the judiciary says we're not getting into this, then, you know, then we're gonna have a crisis on January 8th, where six people are going to try and, you know, it's musical chairs.
Yeah.
Where they try and six people in robes try and sit in three seats. So that's what's coming up.
Oh, wow. All right. Well, that's fun to look out for. In happier news, I think it is time to thank our new patrons. What do you think?
Absolutely.
All right, time to thank our new patrons at patreon.com/law. I hope they're enjoying all the benefits and the bonus episodes and all that. And they begin with upper management: Jennifer Smith, James Blackwell, Blake Barnett, Adan Kvas, I don't know. Sorry. Adan Kvas something. This is weird characters that I can't read. In high school, they called me Casual Dave. Alita Verster, Peter Jones, Brett Kavanaugh's fake cry, real Donald Trump, Alan Shutko. By the way, I disagree with that. I think he was very, very much actually crying. Colin Williams, Donna Tafariello, Tim Kruger, Mestel and Company, Felicity Kuznets, Kirsten Nielsen, David Engelhart, Alessandra Mongardi, Tim Anglin, 12 Angry Men, More Like 100 Million Angry Women. A little bit of doubling up on some of these. That's good. Liz Female Assistant Weeks. Craig.
Hey, welcome back,
welcome
Liz.
Back. Christopher Tuttle. SC. Eric Ellenbrook. Gabriella. McKinney ISD Doesn't Respect Non-Christians. The Best Defense is a Good Calendar. Mary Hasbrouck. Kyle Caffrey. Ian Stokes. Aaron Dalton. Jonathan Simmons. Jennifer. Practicing yodeling 2 times a week to improve larynx health. Gunner's mate first class Philip Asshole. Alexander Johnson. Lucas York. Put Mendoza on the bench. Ziegler 2020. Katie Byram needed the OA bonus episode and finally paid for it. Samtron 7000. Michael Baum. Am Suha. Matthew Armstrong. Nadius Maximus. Ksenija Vrenjevac. Oh, sorry. Jay Young. Sordidatis. Shane Fjestad. FJ. How do you pronounce that? Fjord. Shane Fjestad. Support your local legal aid provider and demand civil Gideon. Skeptical Seventh. Jeremy Roman. General Jigglypuff. Jim Weiss. I did it for the OA bonus episode. DW, hope we get to forget about Kavanaugh and always remember the bravery. Yeah, good thoughts, but no, probably not. Kyle Tyree, 420, blaze it, broski. Daniel Z, saucily intruding Trump's foxhole. Mark Wainwright, Tor Lieberg, Paralazer. And Andrew S. for Chief Justice, because Andrew T. says he can't. Oh, I like it. All right, that's it for me. Your turn.
Yeah, I really hope that Jennifer Smith is my childhood friend, Jennifer Smith. That's a pretty common name, but that'd be awesome if it were. Hi, Jen. Thanks to Nick McCollum. I liked beer. Still like beer. We liked beer. Kyle You had FJ. This is FS. So ooh. Kyle Funfson, KB, Kirsten Craven. That's our second Kirsten. Christopher Bosch, Mike Wagner, Wags. I don't know if that's a Kavanaugh type joke, right? Like he's Wags. I did see the John Oliver That's with all the fake names.
Yeah.
Anyway. Adam Stanley, Tynan Daly, Jason Brandt, Eric Burrows, Joe Esposito, Give Money to Beto. Yeah, I agree with that. Will, Kevin Smith, Kavanaugh's Eskimo brother, Will Stoddard, Big Pooper. Well, good for you. Elliot Mason, Jacob Savage, Olga Payne, Jonathan Darley. I think this is Sinister Freedom, S-N-S-T-R Freedom. Victor Clean, Jamie Reed, David McInnes, Michael R. Bull, Thomas Harvey Kriegel, Zachary Moore, John Bartlett, Robert Gaudette, Tim Shoemaker, Sam Cubitt. That's a Cubitt joke? Anyway, I like it. Chris Caldwell, Karen Perry, definitely take legal advice from this podcast. Don't take legal advice from that. Carl Turpin, Janie Bullard, David Rapp Kirshner, Sean Williamson, Charles Morse, no one of consequence. I doubt that. You're a consequential person. John Murphy, Half Squatch, Interrogate Bart O'Kavanaugh, Caitlin Vamvas, Blake Enfinger, Holly Scheftel, Austin Harris, Lindbergh Michelson, Brian Mollahan, Atheist NASA Engineer Demands More Godless Space Law, Jonathan Brian Gravett. You are kidding me on this. This is Jochen, J-O-C-H-E-N, and then I think it's Schuster, but there's the section symbol, you know, the little...
Yeah,
like,
I don't know what... I think it's that export does that somehow.
So I think Jochen, thank you very much. Prostrate Simulation. All right, well, good for you. He's not the president. He's a very naughty boy. I named my cat Thomas. Now he runs Thomas Cat's Second Chance Law Firm. Chris Bell, Read Zero Sum Game by S.L. Huang. Action-packed math thriller. Oh, that sounds fun. H-U-A-N-G. So Zero Sum Game. Let me check that out. Borrelia Bergdorferi. Borrelia Bergdorferi. Zane Olson. Ben Zoller. Rich M. Nicholas Lange. Kellen Wang. Margaret Roars and Ahmed. Thank you all so much for supporting the show over at patreon.com/law. We hope you are enjoying being patrons as much as we are enjoying having you be patrons.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. Hope you enjoy all the content.
Oh, no associate of this firm has ever failed the bar exam.
No kidding.
All right, and now it's time to find out how Chad and I did on last week's TTTBE. I know I've got a lot riding on this, Chad. I know you do as well. This is immensely important.
It is.
To you.
I could be at 100% or zero.
That's true. It really is higher stakes for you. You're either perfect or absolutely abysmal at bar questions. So we'll see.
All right, so this was a contracts question. Thomas, as all of our listeners know, they are literally waiting with bated breath. They know you need to get the next 5 questions in a row correct in order to hit the coveted 60% at the half threshold. This was question number 96. This was a contracts question. This should have been right in your wheelhouse, right? This was bakery offered a chef a permanent full-time job as a pastry chef. While waiting to assume the position, saying that I'm going to work in 2 weeks, but 1 week in, she gets an even better job offer as a restaurant manager for more money. And so calls up the bakery and is like, sorry, I'm going somewhere else. Then the question was, is the bakery likely to prevail in a lawsuit against the chef for breach of contract? Thomas, both you and Chad were pretty confident that the answer was A, no, because a contract for permanent employment would be interpreted to mean that the chef could leave at any time. And we had a little bit of a discussion on, you know, permanent and that sort of thing. I'm not going to beat around the bush. Both of you got the question correct.
Ooh.
So cue applause.
And there was much rejoicing.
This was, in fact, a very, very easy question, largely because I think the other answers were almost entirely preposterous.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, good.
So, you know, what's the best process in the world? Process of elimination? The other answers, I would find it hard to imagine you could get that. Like, I think a good attractive distractor would have said, you know, something about the expectation or reliance in the week or whatever.
Yeah, but yeah. 2 weeks notice. Something that lay people would latch onto.
Right. But it wasn't there. And so it is, in fact, that the case that, quote, permanent employment in the United States today at common law without anything else specifying that relationship is construed as kind of the exact opposite of permanent, right? It means employment at will. You can leave at any time. They can fire you at any time for any reason. That's the system we live in. So you correctly applied the law of employment at will to this scenario to come up with the answer A. And I think that means Chad is officially the greatest lawyer of all time.
Yeah.
Right? I think I better stop playing this after this question. Sounds good. Stick with my 100%.
Yeah. Wow. I wish there I could do that well. Good job. All right.
Hard to
well,
beat 100%.
Tell us who this week's lucky winner is, Andrew Hopp, in your time machine. And I hope it's somebody who, you know, rigged up some sort of like a cannon to fire a cannonball at the correct answer. Something creative.
Meanwhile, at the Hall of Justice.
All right, Thomas, this week's winner is Manchicken on Twitter. That is at Manchicken, whose entry contains an awful lot of clown horn that I'm not sure I can read. I think the one sentence that still works is, if employers want loyalty, they need to earn it. And then there are some references to, well, everybody can just check it out for themselves on Twitter. Give at Manchicken a follow. I think he accurately captures the state of morale here at opening arguments in light of Kavanaugh's vote and swearing in on Saturday. So congratulations, I guess. Serious congratulations on getting it right.
All right, that's it for today's show. Thank you so much once again to Chad Schneider. And thanks, Andrew, for letting me get a nice, easy bar question correct. No, there's no, the sanctity of the game. Andrew would never interfere. four more to go to get that perfect 60%. and we'll see you on Friday for another rapid response. See you then.
I can't wait.
You betray the law!
This has been Opening Arguments with Andrew and Thomas. If you love the show and want to support future episodes, please visit our Patreon page at patreon.com/law. If you can't support us financially, it'd be a big help if you could leave us a 5-star review on iTunes, Stitcher, or whatever podcast delivery vehicle you use. And be sure to tell all your friends about us. For questions, suggestions, and complaints, email us at openarguments@gmail.com. The show notes and links are on our website at www.openargs.com. Be sure to like our page on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @openargs. Until next time. This podcast is a production of Opening Arguments Media, LLC. All rights reserved.
Opening Arguments is produced with the help of our editor, Brian Ziegenhagen, production assistant, Natalie Newell, and our unofficial researcher, Magpie. A special thanks to the moderators of the Opening Arguments Facebook community, Natalie, Alicia Cook, Eric Brewer, and Emily Waters. And also thanks to Thomas Smith, who wrote and produced all of the amazing music you hear, which is used with his permission.